We're going to read from Exodus chapter 16 on page 73. Exodus chapter 16. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat round pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted, but you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. And in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us?" Moses also said, "You will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You're not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, 'Come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling.'" While Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked towards the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God." That evening, quail came and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Everyone is to gather as much as they need. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent." The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. And when they measured it by the omer, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. Amen. And Stephen is now going to come and bring us our final reading before the talk, which is from Job chapter 38. Which is on page 538.
Job 38, starting at verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm and said, "Who is this that obscures my plans with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundations? Tell me, if you understand. Who marked off the dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched out a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy. Who shouted up the sea behind, shut up the sea behind the doors when it burst forth from the womb? When I made the clouds its garments and wrapped it in thick darkness, when I fixed limits on it and set doors and bars in place, and when I said, 'This far you may come and no further,' Here is where your proud waves halt. Have you ever given orders to the morning, or shown the dawn its place, that it might take the earth by its edges and shake the wicked out of it? The earth takes shape like clay under a seal. Its features stand out like those of a garment. The wicked are denied their light, and their upraised arms are broken. Have you journeyed to the springs of the sea, or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the deepest darkness? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. Amen.
Okay. Hopefully that's working. Yes, it is. Well, something's working. That's great. Hi. Tom's going to project something for me in a moment, but not quite immediately. First of all, just wanted to say it's great to see you again. He's nodding. And you know, you're coming here for the first time. We've been here, I think, since Sam was 16 or 17. Not going to give away your age. A little while. And I wrote in one of our Thought for the Days during the last 18 months, I wrote of a church that everybody was saying, it'd be great to get back to church, it'd be great to get back to church. And I wrote of a church that I longed to get back and see. And it wasn't my home church. With no disrespect to them at all. I really look forward to coming back and seeing you guys again. So I want to tell you that because I want to be honest. And I want to tell you that as well to encourage you three folk. Because I'm looking at him because he'll either nod or he'll shake his head. we're part of our family here. We come up and have been doing so at least once a year, hopefully twice a year, unless they close the doors and shut the curtains. And from day one, we have been made welcome and we have felt part of this family. So I want you to know that because I want you to be encouraged. You don't have to have. I've got a congregation. Oh, if that sounded. I am part of a congregation. I'm not nobody at home. I'm part of a congregation of something like 150 adults back home. Size does not matter. Amen. Anyway, that's a preamble. I just wanted to say that because it's really good to see you again. Today is harvest in English terms, or Sukkot. Hopefully the pronunciation is roughly right, in Jewish terms. So I came up with a little YouTube video that Tom is going to show for us before we get on to the talk. So I'm going to sneak along here.
Did you know God talked about a holiday that someday all nations will celebrate together? Your knee-jerk reaction might be, yes, either Christmas or Easter, but it is none other than the Jewish festival of Sukkot, also known as the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths. Somewhere between a telephone booth and your favorite corner booth at a local restaurant, but we'll get into that later. So what exactly is Sukkot? For starters, it's the last of the three pilgrimage feasts, Passover and Shavuot being the other two earlier in the year. For these feasts, the Jewish people travel on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem whenever possible to celebrate all together. But is Sukkot talked about in the Bible? The answer is yes. In Leviticus 23, God commanded Moses, "Speak to the people of Israel, saying, on the 15th day of the 7th month, and for 7 days is the Feast of Booths. When you have gathered the produce of the land, you shall celebrate the Feast of the Lord. It is a statute forever throughout your generations. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days, that your generations may know that I made the people of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." The whole purpose behind this holiday is to remember how God brought them out of slavery and into freedom. freedom while providing for them all along the way. And these are reasons to celebrate. The telltale sign that the holiday is underway are the Sukkot booths, tabernacles, that one can spot outside Jewish homes for the whole week. They are like decorated forts on their balcony or in the yard. Think camping. Well, it's more like glamping. People traditionally decorate them with harvest fruits, lights, and lots of color. It's a family affair and something that kids look forward to for months. Then they dwell in their sukkah for 7 days, just as the Lord commanded, to remember their time in the wilderness. And it gets even better. It wasn't exclusive for only the people of Israel to celebrate. This is something God expanded the camp from just his chosen people to all people. God encouraged Moses to gather all men, women, children, along with the foreigners of their land, so they could learn to fear the Lord. Even way back then, God was training Israel to be a light to the nations. He desired to dwell with them during the Feast of Tabernacles, and hundreds of years later, he sent his son Emmanuel, which means God with us, to dwell with us forever. In the book of Revelation, we look forward to the somewhat constant Sukkot celebration, when God will once again dwell on earth with us. Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. He will dwell with them. They shall be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. This powerful image of the Sukkah, or tabernacle, serves to commemorate God's dwelling among his chosen people in the wilderness. It's also a beautiful invitation to all of us to dwell with him forever. And now that's something we're celebrating together.
Right, so that's just the background to Sukkot. And we have our own harvest festival in England more often than not. But it's only part of what I want to talk about today, because this is my notes. Anybody who knows me, Steve, got notes? Yeah, well, it's not much. Partly what I'm going to say this morning is what I've experienced in the last 18 months, and I've got a number of stories that I hope will encourage you as they've encouraged me. If at any point you think it sounds rather like Steve is blowing his own trumpet, I've put that across wrongly, so please excuse me. That's not what I intend. When I've talked with or met with different Bible study groups, it's interesting the things that Christians struggle with. And you might think that it would be the death and resurrection of Christ, or, you know, something really theological. And I've found that so often it's worry. And will there be enough for tomorrow? Will I be all right tomorrow? And I've struggled with that, because if you're willing to accept God's word that he said, I'm going to raise my son from the dead, and did it, then how can we really struggle with Jesus' word when he says, do not worry about tomorrow? Now, in a way, I hope I'm preaching to the converted, but in the last 18 months, there's been so much going on, as you all know. And one of the things that people have said is, what is God saying in all this? I never hear God saying anything, and from kind of day one of the pandemic and lockdown, it was as if, and I'm not alone in what I'm about to say, I assure you, as if I had heard God shouting. And what God was shouting to his church was, get out there! Those of you who can, get out. And so here we go with some of the stories. As I said, we live in strange times, and Steve and I both love weird signs. He's maybe even more pedantic than me, and that's really pushing it. But we were driving up here, and just to illustrate the sort of times we've suddenly find ourselves living in, you know, with the masks and the Zoom, and we're driving up here, and it big sign from Highways Agency or somebody saying, you know, road work starting here, whenever, on the M1, was it? Yeah. And it said, preparing for a digital motorway. And I thought, well, that's great. How will that work? You save on petrol at least. Strange, and I came round, you possibly didn't see this one. We came round here and there's the sign outside the pub. And it says, double spirits for just £2 more. I thought, that's good, you know. Elijah asked for that, didn't he? He didn't have to pay. But he said, you know, and I thought, but tell you what, I'll settle for the one. I'll just go with the one. So what's God done in the last 18 months when I'm talking about this sort of thing? And really, the question I like to ask people is, was what Jesus said about God's provision pie in the sky? Was it realistic? Jesus seemed to go from place to place, and we read in certain bits in the New Testament, he had a group of followers who tended to look after his needs. He didn't seem to have a problem, despite the fact he said, you know, the foxes have holes and the birds have got their nest, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. So was Jesus just making a stupid comment, right? You know, excuse the irreverence. But no, I don't think he was, because I find Jesus terribly, terribly realistic. And that means that he must have been talking from his strength from the Father. And I'll come on to the Job bit later. Of course, we've got the bit of God providing in the wilderness, which is what Sukkot is all about. But last March, if you can remember, back to last March, because so much has gone on. And I'd been helping in the annex at the Salvation Army. And as you recall, we gradually locked down last year, didn't we? And then all of a sudden it shut us down. And we moved from having a drop-in centre for the street folk and anybody who wished to come in with any need to briefly having a takeaway table. And then, again, you may recall that takeaway's gone. And so I happened to be one of about five of us, actually in the hall. And the supermarkets, as you recall, the shelves cleared. There were fights, there were queues, nobody could get a delivery slot, all sorts of things happened. And at that point, the Canterbury Food Bank collapsed in on itself because it had so many needs. And sorry, if I get emotional at any point, yeah, I'm just a bit wacky, but, you know, to me, all this is very tied up with my emotions. And at that point, one of the churches in the area phoned up, and they phoned the community worker in the hall, and they said, we've got 25 families in need on one of the most deprived estates in Canterbury. Canterbury's quite well to do, really. Can you help? And the community worker was in tears. He said, well, we've got no supplies either. We haven't got anything from the food bank. The food bank had got such a demand suddenly upon it, as I said, it couldn't help. And a couple of us said, well, let's go and look in the rolling cupboards that are in the annex, which kept emergency food supplies. Couldn't possibly have enough. And we took everything out of those cupboards, and we laid it on a table, and we put together 25 bags of food. And we took that round to this church, and we said, there it is, you know. And this, partly it was a great encouragement to the community worker, because she was so upset. She said, we can't answer this need. And it was the start of the emergency work that we got involved in. And I was one literally of two able-bodied people that didn't have to isolate. And we made up food banks. And things came in as the things started. Different restaurants in Canterbury were phoning us up. Different clubs and saying, we've got to shut down. We've got these freezers of food. Can you take them? And I in the mornings, became a pickup driver with one of the younger lads who was okay. And we would go around these different places, and I would leave with a car full to try and then store from the strangest places, beef eaters and pizza huts, and you know what I mean? And that sort of went. And then we saw, what happens next? What does God want us to do? And the phone calls started coming. And in the end, we were making up, and I say this, Steve here has been very involved with the Faversham Food Bank, so this is not just about me, all number of people have been doing things. The phone calls started coming in, and we've sort of made up 80 food bags a week, and it went on. And then you think, well, there's a problem here, because the supermarkets haven't got anything on the shelves. And then that eased a bit, and we used to queue up. And then Morrison's got in touch with us and said, hey, do you want a donation? And we had a van. We borrowed a van. And we would turn up there, and we'd loaded this van with kit. And as Steve knows, you can only have so many bags of pasta, can you, Steve? So many bags of pasta, sorry. But yeah, exactly. But you know, so much kit. And whatever we took in, just went and went and went and went. And there was one occasion that I got to the end of the afternoon, I was on my own by then, because we ran a system where those who handed out the stuff to the delivery drivers didn't meet me to try and keep us isolated and safe. So that if one team went down, the other one could survive. And I got to a stage one afternoon, and I had made up all these bags. And I just looked at these bags, but there was nothing on the tables. That was it. And I just sort of stood there. And I thought, you know, I've got to pray about this. And I said, that's it, God. I have done all that I can do. I know that I can't go back into the supermarket this afternoon. I've been there this morning and taken. I'd never take more than 50% off the shelves. I've done, and I walked in the next day, and the floor of the stage was full of bags. Donations bags. And I said, where have these come from? And they said, we've got a new lady, and she drives a Range Rover, and she'd been in touch with the Canterbury Food Bank and said, look, I've got different people want to donate. Can you come and get it? And they said, we can't come and get it. We're too busy. We're too stacked. And she said, okay, called the Salvation Army and said, I'll pick it up. Can I drive around, pick it up from anybody who wants to give it, and deliver it to you? And in the morning she did that. And in the afternoon I walked into, you know, and there was another occasion, you always put tuna in a bag. If you don't like tuna, I'm sorry, it's tough, but everybody got a tin of tuna or two. And I got everything except tuna. We ran out of tuna, the supermarket ran out of tuna. The food bankers had it all. And there was a knock on the door, and somebody else went and answered the door, and they said, this has just come from Pizza Hut. And it was a cardboard box, and the Pizza Hut had said, look, this is all we've got, we can give you, but can you use it? And I think you see what's coming, don't you? And I opened the box, and there were 40 tins of tuna. And to me, this has been the story of the last 18 months for me. And it's been fantastic. I mean, I ran out of stuff at one point, and Steve said, we've got a surplus of a lot of stuff at Faversham Food Bank. Do you want to come and get it? I filled the car. Thanks to them, I filled the car. Of basics, soup, beans, pasta. yeah, I even ran out of pasta eventually. But we filled the car, because we'd learned, all of us, to, you know, work together. There was a need. And there was the other side of the need, because in Canterbury we have families being moved in, and they would be moved in to an empty house or an empty flat or whatever. And it's the Salvation Army, so they're quite up on the website. People know about the Salvation Army. And they would phone the Salvation Army and they'd say, I've literally got four walls. That's it. Just coming from London, often it is London, because they move the homeless out. I've got four walls. Is there anything you can give me? Well, there were a number of donations. We had maybe a child's bed and things like that. We got food, but I could really do with a fridge or an oven, you know. And there was not one time when that phone call came through that after it, or just before it, somebody had phoned up and said, I've got a fridge, I've got an oven. If you can get it picked up, can anybody make use of it? To me, that was incredibly moving. And we saw God move in so many ways. And about Christmas time, my wife was allowed to come and help me because she's been on the extremely vulnerable list. And we were heading towards Christmas. And Christmas, the Salvation Army send out any child on the list gets a Christmas hamper, you know, a stocking. Every child gets a stocking. And every family gets a food parcel of Christmas-type goodies. And the stores donate these. So I'd got all this worked out. I knew how many things I could produce in a day. I mean, I'm a bit sad like that. And I worked it all out. And I said to Jane, right, we need to do 250 in the next 2 weeks. I can do that. That's fine. And she said, you've got your calculation wrong. I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, it's not one food bag per family. It's an extra food bag, which is Christmas, and the families still get, each adult gets a food bag, each child gets a food bag. For the, you know. And that came to 750. And I thought, this is it, I cannot possibly do 750 food bags in 10 days. Not going to happen. From the supplies and everything. I was going to Morrison's twice a day. And Jane came and helped me. And at the end of that 2 weeks before, the week before Christmas, we had dispatched, with other people doing all the toys and that, we dispatched 750 plus parcels. And I just couldn't believe it. And I've looked at it often on my... You know, I tried to work back and said, you know, I know how much time I spent. You know, no. So that's the background to what God has been doing as far as I'm concerned in the last 18 months. And it still goes on. I pick up from Waitrose every week and they fill my car with bread that was, you know, dated yesterday or fruit and veg. It's still very good. And I took this on from somebody who used to work for us. And I drive out to a children's centre in one of the most difficult estates in Canterbury. And I'd never been there before, and I said, how much of this do you want? And they said, we'll take it all. I said, well, the car's stacked. It's not a little car. And they said, it's okay. In 2 days, that will be gone. So I said, well, how many families do you look after? And they said, we actually feed or look after 80 families that come in here with their children for the playgroup, but we know that most of those families are in need. And I watched it the other day. I took a whole lot of fresh fruit, and we put it on the table like that. And I was delayed because Canterbury was stacked out with cars. And so some of the families were going before others arrived, and these folks said to these families, oh, just before you go, come and see if there's anything you want. And I watched these families came in and took stuff. And boy, was that a lesson to me, I tell you. You know, because everything else has been, I've made up a food bag and somebody's taken it. But when you're watching it happen. So, okay, let's come back to God's word. What has this meant for me? I have been able to watch, and I know Steve will echo this from his work with the food bank. I have been able to watch God provide other people with what they need. And I have found it on many occasions very, very moving. And those occasions when somebody arrives, like that small boy with the five loaves and the two fish, you know, somebody's arrived with nothing as far as they're concerned, and it has been the very, very thing that you need. So, okay, I've watched Jesus' words become reality, and yet I know a lot of people struggle with those. They do worry. I'm talking about Christians here. So why Job? I love certain passages in Job. Certain passages in Job are quite heavy going. Has everybody read the book of Job? Whoa, I tell you what, I'm not being rude. I could ask that in certain other churches and people would go, maybe they've read Bible in a year, but they've skipped Job a bit, like, you know, you skip Leviticus a little bit. Or maybe not at Cape and Ray, you know, maybe a whole month on Leviticus, I don't know. And I love Job, and what I wanted to tie in this morning is, in answer to the question, is Jesus being realistic? We read about Jesus the man, as it were, but what we believe is so much based on God, the Father, the character of God. And when I read Job, and that passage is just, Steve said I could go on. I said if it was me, I probably would go on, and you know. But the character of God shines through that passage, literally from beginning to end and onwards. So when we talk about God's giving, not worrying, what have I learnt? And I think I knew it before, but I've seen it now. What have I learnt in the last 18 months? It's the fact that because I can know the character of God, I can believe that he cares and he does what he says. And Ian made a very heartfelt prayer and echoed, absolutely Ian, for those places where are still, you know, people without. They drop out of our news, don't they? India, in terrible situation with COVID. But it is amazing that I can see, you can see, God do what he says he will do. And the only way he can do it is through us, isn't it? So that message that I felt God was saying right from early on, people said it'd be great to get back to church, to get back to normal. And I've been going, no, I don't want us to get back to normal. Not normal church. Because in my church, normal church may be walking through the door and saying, how are you? I've got a new car. Oh yeah. I've got a new phone. That's a good one. I've got a new mobile phone. It's the X370. It can do this. I spend a whole hour with guys talking about their mobile phones. If you saw my mobile phone, you'd understand. But they have, you know. And God, I'm just winding up now, as my friend Brian would say, I'm coming into land. God is saying to his church and his people, get real, get out there where you can. You know, I appreciate everybody's got their own limitations for various reasons, but I want my church with its walls pulled down, its drawbridge lowered, and its doors open, saying, don't worry, we would love you to come in, but I tell you what, we're going to come out there first to you. And that's one of the troubles. When I come from a big church, or biggish church, that's one of the things we're forever saying, come into what we're doing, come into what we're doing. The last 18 months for me has been, go out, go out, go out, go out. So that's it really for today. Just saying we need to be willing to put God to the test and say, you said, don't worry. You said, I'll provide. God doesn't mind us saying, God, you said that, and yet I look at that country and they're in famine. God doesn't mind us calling him to account in a reverent way. He doesn't mind us saying, we're going to pray, God, for this to be a reality. So what can we do about it? And that's it, really. That's all I've got to say. It's a bit about Sukkot, because he's a provider, Jehovah Jireh. And it's a bit about being thankful. Thanks.